Welcome to BizRocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for BizRocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to BizRocket Radio. We are excited about today's session. Stone is out on assignment, so I'm left here on my own to fend for myself. But we've got two great people we've been chatting with a little bit before the show here that we're excited to go into more detail on. You know, BizRocket Radio is a show that we talk to executives and business owners in the Atlanta area and try to uncover tidbits of information and their experiences and their challenges that they have had and successes as well as some of their experiences to help other executives and business owners do better and grow and also learn a little bit more about what you guys do. So I would like to welcome in Steve Clements and Claudia Copeland. And they are, actually, Claudia is owner, okay, so we got that all straight earlier on.
Yeah. She's the owner.
That's right. She's the owner and C-I-O-E-O and O-O of Executive SpeakRight. And I want to welcome you guys both in.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about your backgrounds. It's interesting to have kind of the speaking piece and the writing piece and the speaking piece all in the same venue. And how did that come about?
Should I start? I came from a background both in education, so I was a college professor in life number one. 10 years into my career, I moved to Hollywood, which I'd been a stand-up comic and an actor and a director, and spent 23 years in Hollywood producing over 3,000 television shows and training top stars to be hosts and guests. So that became a specialty.
Oh, man. We're going to get some good stuff today.
And then 12 years ago in 1999, having just divorced, I happened upon a search that was being done for an endowed chair in television, film, and business communications at Augusta State University. At the same time, I took that and moved from California. When I got to Augusta, I liked the job very much, but I much preferred Atlanta and dated in Atlanta. And who do I meet in Atlanta? Claudia.
Right.
So here I've come from 25 years or so producing or writing television shows and an educational background and training in the oral arena.
Yep.
And Claudia comes in by...
I had spent 35 years doing freelance public relations and writing, and I'd spend 80% of my time writing. You name it. Microwavable pork rinds, iron slurry walls, Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yeah.
And learning that it was all about creating relationship with your reader. So when Steve and I got together and his full-time job was 60 days a year, I said, that will never do. You'll be teaching business, you'll be teaching communications to executives. And he said, well, if I'm teaching speaking, you're teaching writing. And I said, nobody wants writing. And that was 9 years ago. Right. And so today we have SpeakRight, Executive SpeakRight.
And while dating Claudia, I found out her goal, her dream, of what she wanted to do was be a motivational speaker. I said, writing is just what you're going to be the motivational speaker about. So that we got together both the I do's, both professionally and with regard to signing the corporate papers, and it's been that way ever since. And so we bring our backgrounds, we bring a sense of informality, but proper ways to do things. But basically, we bring ourselves and try to get the writing personality and the speaking personality that's natural for our clients instead of the very stiff writing and stiff speaking.
So, Claudia, give me an example of something that you might do with an executive, the types of work that you might be able to help them with.
We are inundated with information today. In one issue of the Wall Street Journal, you get more details than a man in the 1700s got in his entire lifetime. And the information is coming in, and the emails are coming in, the metronome is ticking. And too many executives will still write, I need, or here's something about my product. They have pushed so hard to get to the upper levels that they've forgotten it's about writing to the needs of the reader, whether it's an internal audience or an external audience, that we have to dispense with the I's and the we's and the company name, but write to the reader's pain. And it's a different way of thinking about writing. It's a different way of creating a relationship with the reader, and also recognizing that the way we format, the way there's white space on the page, the way bullets are used, it's all about capturing the reader's eye as he does this sensory scan going down the page before he ever starts reading. Tricks and different ways of positioning.
Do you think... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
Please ask your question.
Do you think that part of that quick move to what I want or what I need is because of that... information is so fast, and if I don't get out what I need first, I'll never get it out.
It's true, but look at what happens. You open up an email or you open up a letter, and it starts with, I want, or Biz Rocket Radio is all about. And I'm already yawning as the reader. I'm thinking, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
If you open with something that's, we can help you get your message across. Are you having problems reaching your ROI?
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got my attention as the reader.
Mm.
Your call to action goes at the end. It's the same concept. People start thank you notes with thank you. Well, 75% of executives do not read all the way through a note that starts with thank you because they know what you're thanking them for.
Yeah.
So they never get to paragraph two that says, I'm looking forward to getting the names of the three companies you thought might want my services.
On the oral side, the biggest fear of all is public speaking. Number two is death. Number three is air flight. People, so in other words, people would rather drop dead in an air flight than give a speech.
Wow.
And I think it goes back to elementary school.
Yeah.
Because Mrs. Brown, your third grade teacher, said, stand when you say that. Come to the front of the room and read your book report. And if you take a speech course in high school, college, they say, don't move your hands like that. Don't do this, don't do that. And everybody becomes fearful.
Yeah, stone-faced and completely not themselves.
Right. So my goal in teaching presentation is to go against what I learned, how I learned to teach speech, and go with the method I used in teaching celebrities to host and guest shows. And that is, who are you? Discover who is the best you. What's your natural voice? And then get away from the, I'm going to talk to you today. And get away from the PowerPoint having every word with the scared speaker sitting in the corner and everyone kind of
reading along.
Reading, dozing off, checking their latest texts.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with the whole the Hollywood deal that you had an experience with. Give me some examples of working with people. What were the biggest challenges that you had working with these guys?
Let's say I worked with Gary Collins, who, if you know the name, he was on daytime television for 13 years, and I did a show with him during the 80s called Our Magazine. He was an actor. He had a nice, charming personality, but he didn't know how to form an interview. He didn't know all the nuances. He knew how to be an actor, but he didn't know how to take his natural very likable personality and make himself into the substitute husband during the day. So we traveled for a year to different radio stations, to different television stations, and the result was a guy who wound up selling, was a long shot and became the hit of the pack in the year that it made its premiere and stayed on the air for 8 years. So it's really trying to find out in dealing with people is, who are you? What's the best you? Who's the you who gives a Friday night dinner across the table, who tells stories? Are you big? Are you passive? Do you do quips? What makes you comfortable? And try to transfer the personal to the professional so that you people hate the word speech. I'd like to think of it as a conversation. It's always one-on-one, even if there are 1,000 people in the audience.
Right. And do you think that that transformation happened because of the experience that he had traveling around and doing little pieces and shows?
Yes.
And interviews, and he kind of discovered, hey, this is how I work.
We would screen every broadcast as for the rest of the day, look at things, try things out. But we did in many cities around the country. But I also did people like Jake Steinfeld, Body by Jake. I was executive producer of the now iconic 90s Mickey Mouse Club, and I worked with Pat Sajak when he was subbing for Gary Collins, getting him ready, even though he had done game shows, trying to get that personality of his, and saw that he was very good. And also famous name guests like Wolfgang Puck, who had an accent. How do you use that accent and be charming about it instead of having people say, huh?
Right, right. What are the common mistakes that people make when they're going up? If you're coaching an executive on how to give a speech to your shareholders or to a group of possible clients, what are some of the things that are common that people are doing that they could do better?
Number one, they're starting out with, they have to analyze their group. And worked with one person whose staff, he was a CEO, his audience didn't sit any closer than the middle. And that's said something about him. So it's really...
Is that non-welcoming? Does that mean that he's kind of...
It's non-welcoming. It means that they don't feel close to him. Yeah. So he had to learn how to create a relationship with his audience. And in doing this, it's practice, it's looking at it's being believable, it's not being taking something that's so fearsome and saying, just be yourself, and creating an outline that that's different from the way it's taught in college, because I feel that people get very frightened. And, here is so-and-so, and you get on stage, and spots are in front of your eyes. So the first sentence should be written out, right, just so you get comfortable. Yep. The same thing at the end. Get on and get off the stage easily. Go. And I forget what I was going to say, but the whole concept of being yourself and finding a way to make it interesting, not putting the PowerPoint on and reading the PowerPoint. Let the PowerPoint be just a reflection of a couple of notes. You never want the audience to take their eyes off you.
And same question on the writing side. I mean, what are people doing? Writing is almost a lost art. You get these little tweets and emails and quick little thoughts. And how do you go back to getting proper and effective communication from the written word?
We are into such brief amounts. We almost are two extremes. We either write too briefly, the 140 characters in a tweet or the 160 characters in an SMS, or we write extensively because we're so sure that the reader needs to know everything we want the reader to do.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is no one is going to read everything you've written. Everyone is going to misunderstand a portion of it.
Yep.
So if we aren't about starting at the beginning, thinking of what your ultimate message, writing to that message concisely, and ending with a call to action, we've lost our opportunity to grab the reader.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many other companies that do what any one individual does. it all comes down to chemistry. Mm-hmm. It comes down to we want to work with the people who make us feel the most comfortable, who seem to hear what our need is and are there for us. So as Steve said, talking to the audience, creating a relationship, writing to the audience, here's your problem, I hear your problem, here's how we can resolve it, and making it simple and making it concise is the best way to get someone to make the decision to open the door.
If you're looking at getting published in a newspaper and publication, and not necessarily a book, but an article type of thing, what's the best way to go about doing that?
When you're talking about building a relationship with the media and getting covered, it's very, very difficult today. There's so much competition. Everybody believes that they have a message. You have to create enough good information and continue to put it in front of the people who will hire you or approach you about syndication so they see that you aren't just there to sell your message, but you're there to help educate their audiences. Mm-hmm. And eventually, repetition after repetition, plus timing, plus networking, hopefully they'll pick you out of the crowd.
And Claudia, I know that you've worked in all sorts of different industries writing. I mean, like you mentioned, you've done all sorts of different things from Sarbanes-Oxley all the way down to, I don't know what you
said. Cleaning Chick-fil-A units.
Yeah.
Every skin disease you want to know about.
I don't want to know
about them. No, you don't.
But I'm sure you've seen them and you've had to dealt with them. But how does that impact your niche? I mean, what do you really enjoy working with? What are the executives and the types of industries or areas that you really enjoy writing for? You go, oh, this is a good one.
Anything I have to learn something new about.
Really?
My mother went through the agonies of my not being old enough to hold down a full-time job because I spent my first 35 years honing my freelance career. Every time I would learn something about a situation, I would get bored and I'd want to go on to something else.
Yeah.
I like working with companies who have a message to tell because it's the same package. I don't care what your industry jargon is. It's still about what does your reader need to know
and formulating
how you can resolve it. Right.
Formulating that and then putting it into a structured way, properly writing it and getting that message across in a succinct fashion.
And still conveying your own personal style because your writing should not look like my writing. It's still about selling you and your message.
It's kind of like the speaking side, too, right?
Exactly. We're trying to promote individuality, not here's how you hold your hands. Do this and then do that. And in three, you do this.
Yep.
You can't have more than one in every 5 minutes.
Right.
Suddenly say and
then you stop.
Then you go, oh, damn, I said, oh, hell, I said damned.
Yeah.
And you're beating yourself up instead of just moving on.
Yeah.
I try to teach the belief that if you make what you consider to be a mistake, if you laugh about it, the audience will be comfortable and laugh with you.
Yeah.
But if you're uncomfortable about it, you've lost the audience because of your own discomfort.
I remember a speech class that I took in college, and I've always been fairly good in front of people, and the practice has gotten, has been very helpful. There's nothing better than just getting up there and doing it. But you're right. In those teaching classes, they put you kind of into a box. There's different styles, and you can do it this way, or you can do it that way. But it is. It's like, don't do this and don't do that.
Don't.
It's not about being yourself. It's about, there's a way to do it, and this is how you have to get it communicated.
And here's the text. It's 400 pages. Well, it's like learning how to play the violin. You can't read it in a textbook.
Right.
You have to have someone helping to shape you and see yourself and try it and practice. But the whole concept of there are dozens and dozens of presentation books out there. But you have to work with someone you're comfortable with who may help you to find your own voice.
Let's get beyond 101 stuff, okay? Because if we're talking to executives, they know, they've been in front of people. They can write a paragraph. They think they can. Okay, so they think. Let's go beyond that. We're working with somebody who's maybe they're skilled. Again, this is for both you guys in the writing area to a certain degree, and they're skilled in speaking. Let's get nitpicky. What makes that person really, really good? I mean, that is what you need to be doing. What are those people that are not quite at that expert level, but they're really good? What's the difference between that differentiation?
When they're writing, it's about being concise. I keep harping on being concise in writing to the reader. Too many executives come in with all of the reasons they want to do something, all of the justifications, all of the caveats. It's about why this is beneficial. Here are the best ways we're going to do it. And here's the call to action. Here's what you do next. Because no reader is going to sit there with a laundry list of, oh, he wants me to do this and he wants me to do this. It's helping persuade, inform, or motivate that reader in the shortest amount of time. We all know how to write a sentence. The reality is a reader is going to read 100% of an 8-word sentence. They're going to read 80% of a 12-word sentence. Most of us tend to write 20 and 30-word sentences. We've lost the reader before he even gets to the end. And one point when Steve was saying, if you're speaking and you make a mistake, laugh, we forget that people rivet on a typo. We're so entranced with grammar check and spell check or thinking that our support staff is going to read it, and you have one typo on your page. You don't let it get cold. You don't read it over. You have one typo. You've lost the reader's attention, and he's going to remember that mistake and assume that your organization will make that kind of mistake.
So now the writing person's got me nervous, right? So you can't make a mistake in writing.
No, my friends won't write to me either.
No, I wouldn't write to you either. I'll send an email. Thanks. Period. I'm done. Okay, yeah. Succinct and to the point, and I didn't misspell it. But on the speaking side, you can make mistakes. That's
yes.
Kind of what you're saying.
Everybody does.
Yeah, and you can laugh about it.
I'll use the example. I talk about one of my idols, Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson, every night for 30 years, came out there and, let's say, he bombed with a joke. Yeah. Well, some comedians start insulting the audience. They become upset. He was upset, but for the audience, he'd bring down the boom mic above him and he'd tap on it and just have a look. Then the band would play T for Two and he'd do his tap dance. And it was funnier than any joke could be.
Yeah.
And he kept on going and the audience loved it. So if you've won over the audience and you've made a mistake, you can say you've made a mistake. If you're floundering, you can say, I'll be back with you in just a moment. talk amongst yourselves and make people laugh, and it relaxes you.
But people are not as concerned. Well, are people not as concerned about writing, do you feel they're more relaxed with their writing than they are with their speaking?
They assume that writing is a necessary evil, and what's in their head is going to come right out their fingertips and on to the email or the text. That's why they drop in those little emoticons. Just to make it better in case I said something wrong.
Right.
What they forget is the emoticon they typed on the computer does not show up on somebody's handheld.
Yeah.
So they've suddenly insulted somebody.
Right. You get, instead of a smiley face, you get like a block or something, right?
Or a check or nothing.
Yeah.
So you can ease, or you're in a flippant mood. You're feeling funny that day. You do a joke. Mm-hmm. The other person's having a bad hair day. It doesn't come across.
Yeah.
We just think that the writing is just... It just works. And it doesn't. It's also, as you said, it's an opportunity to differentiate yourself. And we need every opportunity we can do to differentiate ourselves in today's competitive world.
So from a writing standpoint, it's good to great. The difference between good to great is short, succinct, to the point, and accurate.
And written to the audience's needs, not your needs.
Gotcha.
Think about the reader before you ever lay fingers to keyboard or pen to paper.
Good. Good. All right. So, Steve, the good to great on speaking, what makes people great?
From good to great would be to have the skills to create a relationship. Great is using just coming in with an opening statement that will get people's attention. Great is not using the PowerPoint to the point that it overshadows you and people want to get out of there. Great is being anecdotal enough so that people love hearing stories, so that it is, people walk in, people hate listening to presentations as much as those who have to give them. It's, oh boy, it's today I'm going to talk to you about. And everybody goes, today I'm going to talk to you about, because everybody says the same thing.
Yep.
They don't use any conclusions. They say, any questions, good, none, I'll sit down. It's got to be a sense of someone who has his or her own type of charisma. Mm-hmm. And that comes through that it is uniquely yours, and you've got to seem like you're enjoying it. Even if it's bad news, that's got to be handled so you feel that you're in the hands of a professional.
Right.
It's also about vocabulary. Mm. We take in information in shorter words. Try instead of endeavor. Change instead of ameliorate. It's not that we don't appreciate a good vocabulary. It's that when you're listening or when you're reading, the easier it is to take that message in,
right,
the quicker I'm going to keep it and not glaze over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of executives have these beautiful vocabularies, or they're using buzzwords or acronyms, thank you very much, and they're losing the audience, and they need to remember to talk as though you're talking to somebody in the 10th grade.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to. One of the things that I've seen a lot is when you go to someone who's either speaking or writing, and they start using industry language, mm-hmm, or technical, mm-hmm, language, and you just all of a sudden you go, whoop, I missed that whole sentence.
This
because
isn't
the one
for me.
Yeah, the whole one word just lost you. Or in a speaking engagement, if somebody is just speaking at this level where maybe, you know, 10% of their profession can understand them, but everybody else is kind of in that middle range. Even if it's a great message and they're charismatic, that sometimes it can just intimidate or put people off.
And sometimes people do it on purpose, but that intimidation is not going to win you over and have a good organization. It's, if people are intimidated, they're not going to want to go to these meetings.
Yeah. So it's they're trying to build credibility,
right,
showing and flaunting this vocabulary or looking like it seems like they know what they're doing, and it actually goes against them. Both writing and speaking.
That's right.
People rolled their eyes. I needed this. I don't know half of what he's talking about.
Steve is teaching more clients in teleconferencing and performing for streaming video. And it becomes even more important because people can do other things while they're listening to you.
Yeah.
They can go work a crossword puzzle or work on another project or take a phone call. Add in a difficult vocabulary. Add in the inability to speak to that little red light
it's
an individual, and you've got a double whammy.
Are you doing video conferencing or mainly webinar type stuff?
I train in the use of a camera.
And whether
it's part of a group meeting or whether you're working directly into the camera. So I always say that you're talking, if you're talking directly into a camera, it's a Skype, it's a video conference of some sort. And I start with an exercise in which people have to tell a story as though we're sitting across from lunch or dinner on a Friday night. And one time I had a client who, she was supposed to tell her story. And I said, this camera is your date. His name is Phil.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell the story to Phil. Don't talk to a camera.
Right.
Talk to this box as though he's just a strange-looking date. So she began, and she said, Phil, why don't you go first? So I said, no, Phil doesn't talk.
Work. Yeah, Phil's a mute. He doesn't. Yeah. He's not going to respond very well to that.
We personally don't do webinars and teleconferencing with our clients in the first round, because this is such a behavioral change. It's such a different thought process. And it's about, because we're into customizing and working with the individual, we have to actually be face-to-face with you. Steve tapes them. I look at their practice rights so that we can work with who and what you are. And then afterwards, we can do things by Skype and email. But we're talking about a behavioral revamping of the way that we write and speak, thinking about the audience as opposed to ourselves, which is just rare.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about your ideal client, somebody that would be a really good person that would get a lot out of it, and it would be a person that would fit into your practice well.
For me, it sounds like the entire world, anyone who writes, but it's typically that rising individual up to a senior-level manager who's writing to the Public Service Commission. It's someone who's writing business letters. It's someone who does all of their work by email, and they're forgetting it's the personal touch.
Right.
They've gotten into ruts. They're using templates that the organization has given them for year after year, and they've forgotten the way we take in information. What captures our attention has changed.
Has email, I mean, obviously email is a extreme convenience. It's very simple. Have we gotten really away from the message with email? Is it just too easy and quick to text a quick little thing and forget about what the message is supposed to be?
Email was perpetuated as a way for computer geeks to share Dungeon and Dragon moves. It was purposely lowercase. It was purposely sentence fragmented.
Yeah,
we took that into the business world. Yeah. We've forgotten that the subject line is critical. Executives are not going to read 33% of the emails they receive, no matter how many times you press high, urgent, important, unless that subject line grabs you at the beginning.
Yeah.
We've signed all of our emails with thank you when we're asking somebody to do something and they haven't done it yet, or giving them bad news, go jump off a cliff, thank you. We have forgotten that we need to use the email to get our message across, and that people aren't going to read to page two of an email, particularly when you get into a texting or a PDA or an iPod environment. The longer that message is, the quicker we start scrolling down.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways we have to write in a more succinct, technology-driven environment that we've never had to face before.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, what about you? Is it a similar...
My group that I teach really is from middle management up to the CEO.
Right.
Because the people down below are not going to give many presentations.
Yeah.
And on the CEO level, they're not going to be part of a class. And in many top executives, I do one-on-one coaching. I have a home studio, and it becomes a very private, personal day. And the results are always great. I do classes for people. I do open enrollment. The next one is on May the 20th, so that people can be part of a group and they see other people and it's sharing and it becomes a group dynamic. I don't believe in the type of criticism that is done in academic environments. I believe in coaching, in coaxing, and accentuate the positive and saying what the job is. So in both cases, when you're dealing with writing and speaking, there's a lot of psychology that goes into it because you're looking for behavioral changes.
And have you found that the use of non-public speaking, because I would imagine at the CEO level and even at the VP type of a level, you've got TV, you've got radio, right? You've got all these different medias that are used. Is there much coaching that goes into that, or is it mainly still kind of that stand up in front of a crowd and capture that audience?
It's very honestly, I get more gigs out of the presentation.
Okay.
But I would like to get more for the organizations that have meetings once a week for an hour, that run 4 hours, all the loss of work time because people just tend to go over. I'd like to do more with people being, there's going to be a lot more among plans of people looking into the camera screen, into the lens, and trying to create that relationship that way. So those are the areas of growth that we're looking towards.
That's a tough thing is doing those webinars because I do public speaking all the time and I'm very used to that. But again, the transition to the webinar has been, there's no feedback. You know, I mean, radio is a little different because usually you're talking to somebody like this. You're talking to an individual, maybe not a large group. But that webinar is just you and that computer screen, and it's hard to get, you know, hard to get the feedback. Mm-hmm. How have you found the challenges in transitioning from doing a webinar versus doing a seminar or some sort of a speech?
I haven't taken part in webinars. I find it cold. People are doing it out there, but I tend to concentrate on the one person's delivery into the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's working with other leaders of CEOs of other organizations or whatever that person does, I want my client to be strong with it. But as I said, one of the things in the future is I want to work with entire groups to change their meeting habits. There was one particular group I worked with that it turned out that was not what we were going to do, but everyone was so enraged about the fact that they had a one-hour meeting from 9 to 10 every Monday morning that lasted until 1 o'clock that changed the day totally, and it became on getting this international group together so they could do meetings. How do you time things out? For meeting heads, how do you put in compartments so that we have two more minutes in this section before we move on? You and you can talk. Okay, we move on. So if it's
that's an almost organization of that,
it
right?
It is. It's you've got even, a person has got to be a facilitator. Mm-hmm. The person has to hold on to his agenda or her agenda. I had
Thank
a client. I had a client.
Training, right?
Yeah, I work on it constantly.
I had a client from one of the top accounting firms, international accounting firms. His problem was when he had a meeting with his staff. He couldn't keep his agenda because they'd interrupt him and they'd deflect him. So even working with him, I would start talking and he'd give up power. So it's to teach, you know, everyone has his or her own issues to deal with. In his case, how to work with the idea of you give up the floor when you are ready to give up the floor. Until then, say, I'll get you in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
This giving up the floor concept is interesting. It's true when you're writing as well, when you get to that call to action at the end of your communications. Mm-hmm. If you say, call me if you have any questions, you've given up the power. You're now sitting there twiddling your thumbs.
Right.
If you say, I will contact you within the next week to set up a time, you still have a reason to pick up the phone and call.
Yeah.
We have to be powerful. We have to come across as competent and capable today.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, we are running a little short on time, but this is extremely interesting to me, and I'm sure to the audience. We always ask our guests at the end of the show for a pearl of wisdom, so I'll ask you guys get two pearls, okay? Two for the price of one here today, and I'll start with Steve. So, Steve, tell me what your pearl of wisdom would be to the listeners in your experiences. What would you say? Hey, always keep this in mind.
The one-liner I would use is, don't feel that technology can replace you. And specifically, that's the PowerPoint. It's very valuable, but it can't become you. The text message, this gets into Claudia's area. Sometimes you should phone. It's not a text message. Sometimes it's got to be more formal. But it's new technology. It's not necessary. New technology is not necessarily best for every situation.
Don't let it just take over all your communications.
Right.
Okay.
And mine would be, think about the reader. Drop the I, the we, or the company name in your first sentence. If you're starting with I or we, it's about you and not the reader. It's the hardest thing in the world to do, but if you can conquer that, you're three quarters of the way there.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you guys spending the time with us today. If somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
They can either go onto our website, which is www.executivespeakwrite.com, or they can call us at 404-846-7996, and we'd love to hear what their needs and concerns are and whether we can customize something that will respond to those.
Okay. Well, we appreciate, again, you guys spending some time with us. For all our listeners, we appreciate your time, and we will look forward to being back a week from today, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, here on Atlanta Business Radio X and Biz Rocket Radio. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.